time once again for Community Forum. And we are very lucky to have with us live here in the studios this morning, Ed Mead and Gregory Lewis. Ed Mead is a former prisoner who was in prison for 18 years as a result of acts committed while a member of Seattle's George Jackson Brigade, a radical underground group that operated during the 1970s. For the past 14 years, he has been the editor of the quarterly Prison Focus magazine, and for the past year and a half, he's been publishing the monthly Rock newsletter. Gregory Lewis is a longtime Seattle-based human rights activist and the producer and host of the podcast AllPowerToThePositive.info. Ed and Greg, thank you very much for coming and spending time with us this morning.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
So let's start out. Tell us briefly about your work and your publication, starting with you, Ed. Talk about Prison Focus and Rock.
When I got out of prison, I taught myself computers while I was on the inside, and as a result of that, was able to get a job in San Francisco. And while living in San Francisco, I became involved with an organization called California Prison Focus. And their focus was on prisoners who are held in the security housing units, or SHUs. And they published a quarterly newspaper called Prison Focus. And I became the editor of that. And it just became a labor of love. And I've been doing it for about 14 years. It's got a circulation. The print run is between 7,000 and 3,000. And primarily the readers are prisoners in California. The Rock newsletter, I started as a communications vehicle for prisoners who are in the security housing units in California. And it has a print run of about 500, almost entirely SHU prisoners within the state of California.
All right. And Greg, All Power to the Positive.
Well, All Power to the Positive is a show that I started putting together with my co-host, Jacob the Jacobin Brown, December of 2010. And, that whole thing started off, we listened to talk radio and whatnot, and that just, what we heard was just okay. It was just okay. So we decided to get on there and add our voices to the discussion, as well as, great local hip hop, R&B, dance hall, in fact, music from all over the world. Mixes and the voices of the grassroots, the folks that just really don't get no shine, the folks that'll you'll be filmed talking at around a really serious issue, and you look at their YouTube page a month later and it's only got the topic's only got like less than 100 hits. So finding those folks, the parents, everything from issues such as this upcoming prison action, all the way to the parents of children murdered by police and so on.
All right, so let's talk about an issue that you both have obviously been covering for many years now. I know for at least 20, which is the U.S. prison industrial complex. Can you give us an overview of that?
Sure. I went to prison and came out almost 20 years later, sort of a Rip Van Winkle experience. In 1970, there were 350,000 prisoners in the United States, and today there are 2.3 million. But does anyone feel any safer? Does anyone feel less fear today than they do than they did back then? There are 7.3 million Americans under some form of judicial supervision, parole, probation, that sort of thing. And there are 14 million ex-convicts out there on the streets, or out here on the streets, out here in minimum custody. That's nearly 25 million people. And count the families and friends of those people, and you can see the potential for a movement for change, and which begs the questions of why would there be a movement for change? Isn't everything going just fine? And, of course, that's not the case. The recidivism rate in California is 70%. And if you had a factory that put out a product with a 70% failure rate, you would want to know why people would stop buying it.
And on the subject of epic fail, just to give folks a perspective and to give them a visual, right? From Glenn Ford, Black Agenda Radio, he was citing a statistic where he said, in the United States, there are more black and brown prisoners in U.S. prisons than the total number of prisoners in all of China. So, you know, let those numbers reverberate in your mind for just a moment as Ed continues.
We have 4% of the world's population, the United States does, yet we hold 25% of the global prisoners. The fact of the matter is that it would be cheaper to send these people to Harvard and make nuclear physicists of them than it would be to keep them in prison for a year. But for some reason, people have the idea that you can get good things as a result of doing bad things to people. And it just doesn't work that way. If you have a dog, you know that reward is a better motivator than punishment.
And in terms of the treatment of prisoners in prisons since back in the days when you were there, what has changed there?
Let me bring this around to California. There have been a lot of changes, and the changes have been towards the worst. There used to be back in the late 60s and early 70s, there was a gay liberation movement, and there was a drug legalization movement, and there was a prisoners movement. Well, today here in Washington, marijuana is legal, gay marriage has been approved, but somewhere along the way, the prisoners fell off the boat, and belatedly, they're starting to bring that back. On the inside, there's been in response to every sensational crime, they take away a little bit more from the prisoners. They make their conditions a little bit rougher. California, as I think most people know, has a horrific gang problem. Not only just, you know, the whites against the blacks, the northern Mexicans against the southern Mexicans, the Serenos, the whites, you know, the Aryan Brotherhood and Nazi lowriders. There's just, you know, all sorts of these prison gangs. And the response of the state of California has been to lock suspected gang members up. And they've been doing this for about 40 years. And what they do is they take these gang leaders and they put them in security housing units. They put them in a cell, a windowless cell. And they're in this cell 23 hours a day, most often 24 hours a day, but several days a week they get out into a little dog run, a little dog cage where they can supposedly exercise. And the only way they can get out is by debriefing, and that's just a fancy word for snitching. So you can be labeled as a gang member for almost anything. Sometimes in my newspaper, The Prison Focus, I mention George Jackson. And if a black prisoner is found with a copy of this newspaper with the name of George Jackson in it, then that is one of the 3 points that can count as charging him as a member of the Black Guerrilla family, for example. And so it really takes very little to get locked up as a gang member. And a lot of the people who are in the security housing units for being gang members aren't gang members at all. They're just, you know, someone who is in the administration's hair, and they use that as a label to lock them up. So either snitch or you know, die in a shoe. And like I say, some guys have been there for 40 years, 30 years, 25 years. Because they have principle, because they refuse to be rats, because they refuse to snitch. That's the only reason they're there. And they're not there as a result of a violation of any prison rule. All you have to do is for them to allege that you're a gang member, and they can hold you indefinitely, and that's exactly what they do. So, in July of, let me say one more thing about the California prison system here to kind of give you a little background. In 2011, the United States Supreme Court heard a case from the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals, and before that, the United States District Court, on overcrowding and the medical treatment inside the California prison system. Justice Kennedy, speaking for the court, found, as a matter of fact, that one prisoner a week was dying within the California prison system as a result of medical neglect or malpractice. The Supreme Court gave the state of California 2 years to rectify that problem by reducing the population by 33,000 prisoners. They gave the state 2 years to do that. The 2 years have passed. The state has not done that. They've asked for an extension, and they'll probably receive it. But the point is that one prisoner a week, one person a week, one human being a week is dying, and it's taken all these years and this slowness in order for them to do something about it. Well, finally, prisoners themselves are starting to do something. They announced in early 2011 that they were going to go on a hunger strike in order to improve conditions. I was in Seattle at the time and thought, okay, well, this is going to be about a dozen guys and they're going to have food stashed in their cell. But, you know, hell, I'm a prison activist. I'll fly down to San Francisco and, you know, support their little strike as best I can. Well, come to find out, the state of California has a written policy on hunger strikes for prisoners. And when a prisoner goes on hunger strike, what they do is they enter the prisoner's cell and take everything edible out of the cell. Well, on July 1st, the hunger strike came off. Rather than being just a dozen or so prisoners, according to the Department of Corrections figures, there were 6,600 prisoners participating in this hunger strike, and it went on for 3 weeks. The administration agreed to many of their five core demands, and they ended the hunger strike. Those agreements were not kept. In October of 2011, they initiated another hunger strike. This time, according to the Office of the Special Master, there were 11,619 prisoners participating. And according to the CD, California Department of Corrections, own figures, there were 11,898 participating. This is, and this strike also lasted for 3 weeks and ended only after serious promises from the state of California. Now, can you imagine 12,000 people on hunger strike at the same time? This is a historic event. Well, lo and behold, come to find out, the state of California reneged on its promises. On August 12th of 2012, the prisoners, the representatives of all the gangs, came together and signed an agreement to end hostilities within the California prison system. In other words, the Norenos and the Serenos are not going to be fighting. The whites and the blacks are not going to be fighting. This was a historic event, and this agreement to end hostilities has been holding. Now, the representatives of all these racial groups within the California prison systems has issued a statement calling for not only a hunger strike on July 8th of 2013, that's just a little over a month from right now, but a work strike inside of the general population. So if you're in an administrative segregation unit, or if you're in a security housing unit, a SHU, you go on hunger strike on July 8th. If you are a member of the general population in some California prison, you stop working. Now, of course, the prisons can't function without the labor of prisoners. They sweep the floors, they cook the food, they do everything, the non-custodial duties, almost. They teach in the schools, they do a whole lot. And so, the only way, you know, it used to be a crime for workers out here on the streets to organize back in the 19th. They called it criminal syndicalization or something like that. And now the idea of prisoners organizing or going on strike seems foreign, but it's just the same thing. The prisoners are starting to catch up with with the rest of the social movements. And in this process, they're going to learn how to exercise power. They're going to learn how to be responsible. And this is a really good thing. So what Greg and I and a group of us, we call ourselves Free Us All, which sounds like something you clean your drain with, here in Seattle, and there's a group in Portland and a very strong group in the Bay Area and Los Angeles, are organizing outside support for the July 8th, 2013 prison strikes. And that's what we're here to talk about.
And also, too, I want to give honorable mention not only to these individuals who are taking huge risks to even do this, not only to their health, but also their own, you know, personal safety, and even risk to their families on the outside as far as visitation and that sort of thing, or communication with them at all. And certainly any kind of court cases any of them may be having may be affected. So, you know, people really need to, you know, grasp deeply the ramifications of what these guys are doing, you know. And also, too, how that may reverberate on the outside, period. Because even getting in there, he's talking about the gang designations. In Chicago, two or more people standing on a corner, if the police roll by, they can declare you a gang and arrest everybody. And it's up to you to sit up there in court and prove that you're not. Okay? So let's say you go in on something and you're already going in on a gang designation because that came up in your trial. So, you know, all the process that Ed was talking about may occur before you've even done anything. By virtue of you showing up with that designation hanging over your head, you are separated out for different type of treatment, you know, based upon that. The other thing, too, you know, we have, you know, I was just reading before coming over here, there's a woman in, I believe, D.C. She's a 45-year-old mother. And because her boyfriend, husband, or whatever was dealing dope in the apartment, she's doing a life bid. And she has small children, you know. And so getting in, you know, I mean, we could do a whole, you know, show on the mandatory minimums and laws around drugs and all that kind of stuff. Because let me remind everybody that majority of people who are in prison are in on quote-unquote economic crimes, okay? So, you know, it's almost like the modern-day debtor's prison, you know, plus torture, you know. And couple that with the fact that also municipalities are now also jailing debtors like the state of Ohio. You know, a bunch of municipalities, if you are paying some kind of restitution or parking tickets or something and you miss a payment, and then throw you in the county jail, you know. And a lot of the county jails have conditions similar to what these folks here are dealing with. And, again, that's a whole other subject for another show. But I also want to mention the hunger strike going on in Gitmo right now in Guantanamo Bay, and there's over 100 prisoners and counting involved with that. And also ongoing hunger strikes in Palestine, in the prisons there, amongst Palestinian prisoners. You know, and those strikes have been going for way longer than what these guys are doing, you know. But it's important to connect the dots because the issues facing all these individuals are similar.
One might ask, you know, what are these five unreasonable demands that the California prisoners are asking for that the state won't honor, that the state will lie about, won't give in? They're pretty brief and they're pretty easy. The first is to eliminate group punishments. If one person acts out, the guards come in and punish everyone. The idea being, of course, is that this will pressure the prisoners to police themselves, which isn't their job. Group punishment is not a good idea ever. The Nazis used it and we didn't approve. The second is to abolish the debriefing policy, which I mentioned earlier, that the only way you can get out of the SHU if you're labeled as a gang member is by debriefing. And debriefing, as I said, was just another word for ratting on all your friends. And you don't just have to tell them who's a member of the gang and all the illegal stuff that was going on in terms of the gang. You have to continually do this. And then they move you to what they call a soft yard. They move you to a prison where other debriefers are held. And people with principle, you know, don't rat on their friends. The third is to comply with the recommendations of the U.S. Commission on Safety and Abuse in Americans' Prisons, which was put out in 2006. And, you know, to comply with you know, the U.S. Commission on Safety, to comply with what they say should be the case, I mean, that's really not a big deal. Nor is number four, provide adequate food. Everybody should have adequate food. And the last demand, provide constructive programs and privileges for SHU prisoners. In other words, allow them to participate in correspondence courses and to improve themselves rather than just sit in a cell and vegetate for 23 hours a day.
I mean, this isn't radicalism and certainly not rocket science. It's basic human rights.
The Universal Declaration of Human Rights, which the U.S. Constitution claims is the law of the land, proclaims that all humans have the inherent right to the freedom from slavery, forced labor, torture, and cruel, inhuman, or degrading treatment. The 13th Amendment abolished slavery for everyone, except those convicted of a crime. So we have 2.3 million slaves here in the United States today, slaves of the state, disenfranchised from the political process, unable to vote, held in conditions of dependency and irresponsibility. How can anyone expect to get something positive as a result of doing that to people?
And then also we should mention the torture that has gone on as well, because Pelican Bay in particular, I'm trying to remember when this came down, was not too long ago that guards were instigating fights between prisoners and shooting at those who would not participate. And that was just recent that the feds jumped on them for that one. Yeah. So this is the environment these guys are working in.
So since the Universal Declaration of Human Rights is a treaty, the courts of the United States can't enforce a treaty. They can't, or just as in the case of the 13th Amendment, they can't declare that a portion of the Constitution is unconstitutional. It requires a political struggle in order to bring about these changes. And so that is what both the prisoners and us who support them on the outside is trying to develop, is this political struggle. Now, it should also be noted that the prisoners have not only called for a hunger and work strikes within the state of California's prison system, they're asking prisoners throughout the United States to draw up your own list of demands and to go down on July 8th in solidarity. In other words, let's make this a national push. It's probably not going to go very far in national terms, but in terms of California, I think we can expect some peaceful fireworks on starting on July 8th. And one other thing with respect to this struggle is that the representative in all their documents, in all their paperwork, in all their calls, have insisted that this be a peaceful struggle, nonviolent struggle.
And what's also significant is already some of the first folks outside the state of California to answer the call are some young people in a juvenile facility who have drawn up 11 demands. And I'm sorry I don't have them in front of me today, but we're putting together our website. Is that freeassall.org?
Yeah.
So we'll have that posted for you once that's ready. But the young people, we're talking 12, 13.
Hill.
Is that Green Hill?
Yeah.
Okay. 13, you know, 12, 13, 14-year-olds answering the call. And so they're some of the first outside the state of California to do so with this particular date and action.
And one of their demands is to abolish is to eliminate the slavery provision of the 13th Amendment, which is really far-reaching for these young people. A far-reaching issue for these young people to have internalized at this point. So I think we'd expect to see some real changes developing.
Parents, listen to your kids. Listen to your kids. Listen to your kids. Educators, listen to your kids. Listen to your kids. Listen to your kids.
Just under 5 minutes left. How do California prisons compare with the rest of the country? Are they the worst?
I would say yes. And one of the reasons is because, until recently, the huge levels of gang violence. When you go in, to a California prison, you can't just go in there and do your time. You are segregated by race. And, if you're white, you're put in a cell with a white, and you're expected to be a part of that structure. And if there's gang hostilities going on, and you have to go out and participate in that conflict, in that hostility, if you don't, then they have a saying in these gangs, blood in, blood out. And if you don't participate, if you don't do what you're told to do, then you yourself are a target. And that makes it really bad. But they have people triple bunked in gyms, and it's hugely overcrowded, making conditions bad. And they've taken out the weights, and they've taken this, and they've taken that, and they've taken the other thing. It's just increasing levels of repression. Back in 17th century England, it was a capital offense to pick a pocket or to chop a tree down on a public lane or to kill a rabbit on the king's land. And yet when they would be hanging a pickpocket, the other pickpockets would be out in the crowd watching the hanging, picking the pockets. I mean, increasing levels of repression. If the repression we have today doesn't work, well, let's add more repression. And that is the way it goes all the way up until you get to the point that they were back in 17th century England, hanging people for, killing people for almost nothing. And that's...
Yeah, and then when they got over to the so-called New World, started hanging, burning, and dunking people for witchcraft.
Yeah. 2 days ago was the anniversary of the killing of Joan of Arc by England for heresy.
Oh, yeah. I tell you, they had plenty of years of practice before they came over to these shores.
Yeah.
That's for sure. And certainly coming over here, getting into the torture, cruelty, and, summary execution of native peoples and enslaved peoples and so on, be it for economic purposes or just on a whim, based upon getting a little drink in you and because the law is structured as such because you can. Meanwhile, you can have slaves, being lynched and hung, not only for the humor and profit of these individuals, but also for doing things like owning weapons to protect themselves. Because that was a capital offense in South Carolina if you were a slave.
All right, so how can people find out more about the upcoming July 8th event?
There's a website in the Bay Area called prisonhungerstrike.wordpress.com. And we're developing a website here called Free Us All. That's one word, freeusall.org. And you can get information there as well.
And, of course, you can expect full coverage on allpowertothepositive.info on all these things going on from California and beyond consistently, including just did a recent remix of a commentary Mumia Abu-Jamal did on solitary confinement in relationship to this event. And so we got that, and that's up. It's all over the Facebook, all over Twitter, and, of course, at allpowertothepositive.info, and soon to be migrating to freeusall.org and down to our folks in California as well.
And, Ed, you have a website as well, prisonart.org?
Yes, I sell the arts and crafts of prisoners at prisonart.org.
Beautiful collection, by the way.
It isn't political. It's just a service I provide for prisoners.
All right. Well, with that, we are unfortunately out of time. I want to thank you both very much for coming and spending time with us.
Thank you for the opportunity.
Yeah, totally.